Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. With us today, we have Anna from Schroeder Hillside Farm. Anna, thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So little disclaimer, we do know each other. We met at a homeschool playgroup. So you obviously live in New York as well.
Yeah.
So you feel the pain that we all feel.
Right.
But tell me how many kids you have and what their ages are.
So I have 4 kids, ages 3 through 10. Are their age ranges. My oldest is going into 5th grade, and then I'm homeschooling 3 so far.
Okay, but they're all going to be homeschooled.
Yeah, they're all homeschooled, but the youngest, obviously, I'm not doing anything with,
really,
other than fun stuff.
Yeah. So what got you into homeschooling? You were homeschooled yourself?
Yes. Both my husband and I were homeschooled growing up, K through 12, and so we knew when we got married, we both enjoyed being homeschooled and that we wanted to do that with our kids. So that was basically how we got into it. For us, like public school or other traditional school would have felt weird because it wasn't our normal. And it's kind of interesting because like my mom, she only started homeschooling us because my sister was not doing well academically in the public school system. And she thought homeschoolers were weird. Just like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to have weird kids. But my dad was like, she's doing so bad. We can't possibly do worse. Let's just try it. And they didn't stop.
So did your mother end up liking it or finding a lot of benefits to it?
So it started out for the academic reasons that she homeschooled. And then it just started building where like they saw the family benefits and they saw the spiritual benefits and character. And it just kept building where she went from a reluctant homeschooler to like a kind of a homeschool advocate. They ended up being homeschool leaders and she ended up doing it for, I think, 18 years or 16 years. Because there's 16 years between my youngest sibling and my oldest sibling.
Wow. So what are the age ranges of your siblings?
So my sister is 4 years older than me, and she is 38. And then my youngest sibling is 22. So she's done now, but she homeschooled from when my sister was in 4th grade all the way up until my youngest sibling was 19, because he graduated a year later.
So were you in the public school system at any point in time and then
taken
out?
No, you were. So the year my sister started homeschooling would have been my first year.
And when you look back on it now, like you said, you and your husband are choosing to homeschool because you enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it at the time, or did you wish you were in public school at certain or even, you know, any traditional school setting at any time, and you kind of retrospectively look back on it and are like, oh no, that was better at the time? Did you feel that way though?
I never wanted to go to traditional school. I am kind of an introvert person. I did have some friends that were in public school and I didn't really see the benefits for them. A lot of them, they were in school all day and then they had after school extracurriculars, whether it was sports or drama. So they were in school all day, then they stayed at the school for their extracurriculars, then they had homework, and they squeezed in chores and went to bed. So I felt like they didn't have a life during the school year.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they were running to extra things that their parents did too in the evenings. So for me, I saw them like, I'm done by noon. And then the rest of today is mine. Like, why would I want to go to school? And I also felt like, so I was dyslexic and my mom really put a lot of effort into making sure that I learned how to read. And I feel like this is more in hindsight. I feel like if I had been in the public school system, they probably would have dropped the ball on that. There was a point where my mom's like, well, would you like to go to the local Christian school when I was in high school? And I was like, no, I'm fine with being home.
How was the socialization aspect? Like, how did you make friends? Or, you know, you obviously found a husband, so you were able to talk to people somewhere along the line. But how was that growing up? Did you feel like you were missing out on anything? Or did they have things like the playgroups and stuff that they do now and different?
So
things.
my it's kind of funny because my husband and my experiences are like total opposites. My family, like my mom was this like, we're homeschooling and I'm not going to make a mistake. We're going to do all the things because I want my kids to have a good education. I don't want people to question me. So we were involved in all the groups. We did the local soccer, we did 4-H, church groups. Was on swim team at one point. So we did a lot of things, and it to some extent I almost feel like we did too much. Like if there's
Yeah.
something I could go back and change, I'm like, there's a few things I wouldn't do. Because we did run a lot for a period of time. My husband, on the flip side, they did hardly anything with the homeschool group. They went to a couple potlucks. He had made a few friends, but they really weren't involved. So even though we were in the same groups, I didn't actually meet him until he was an adult and we met through mutual friends. And he wishes that his family was more involved. And I'm kind of like, well, we could have been a little less involved.
Yeah. And there's like never a way to know because the one thing that your mom decided to not put you in, that could have been what you really loved doing.
Yeah.
So it really is hard. Now, how do you navigate that with your children? You have four. I would imagine that that is harder. And I know they're younger, but well, not all of them. I mean, you could be doing stuff every night of the week right now if you chose to. How do you manage that in your family?
So I try to have two things a week that we go to. Usually one of them's church, and then another one is usually a co-op or like Wilderness Kids, or sometimes we just have friends over or meet up at the park. For my kids, they're again a little bit more on the introverted side. That feels like enough for them. If my kids were more extroverted, I think I'd probably want a few more things. But that's more of like kid dependent, I suppose.
Yeah, and in New York, we can't do like the school sports
Yeah.
with them. Are there things that you've found with your kids that you are still able to do that aren't school sport related?
Yeah. So we did try community soccer that you can sign up for. I have found for our family that like organized sports are not their favorite thing. So our kids are the ones that are like you're dragging their feet to go. So we tried it, but they didn't really like
Yeah.
it.
All right. I have to ask you this. Since I started homeschooling with actual curriculum with my 5-year-old, okay, now I'm like in it. Before it was just me talking to families, like asking the traditional, like, what do you do for socialization? And now that I'm in it, what do you do when your kids are just kind of like not in it? And I get that a lot of homeschooling families will tell me, okay, we'll take a break. All right. You don't have all day to take breaks, though. We do want to like get it done so that we can go enjoy ourselves. Do you have any tricks of the trade to just get your child to like focus for a few minutes and get the work done?
When my kids were little, especially my oldest, I felt like he got distracted like after every problem. It was like he'd be halfway through a math problem and staring out a window. And so some of it is, especially if you know the beauty of homeschooling is you can be right there with them. Some of it is taking the time to just be like, all right, let's move on to the next part. And you know, maybe it's going to take longer than it should, but you're just encouraging them to keep starting up. And you know, if they do cry, then you're going to take a break. The other thing I try to do is I have a time, like for us, we try to always be done by lunchtime, and that's always like, oh, I'm free now. I'm done with all of this. When they're really little, it's like 45 minutes to an hour, maybe a little longer than that. But I try to have that like, you're done, you're free, now we can do fun stuff. Sometimes I would save, like, they would always have something they enjoyed in the school program. Whether it was read alouds or art, I would always save that for last. So they had something, do the thing they hate the most first, and then the stuff they like the best last.
And then what, like, how do you make it so that you don't lose your cool?
That takes time. The first year, and so the first year I was officially homeschooling. I had a newborn, and I had a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. So I mean, I was doing stuff before then, but that was like the first year that was official. There were some moments I definitely lost my cool. There's like one time that my oldest will remind me to this day that I lost the cool and like threw the book.
Okay. All
And
right. Hey,
so
I've done that too.
and like,
So.
and it's literally, it happened once, but he still remembers it and reminds me of it. And so I find one of it's a practice thing, and sometimes you have to just leave the room, deep breaths. I do find that now that I have a 10-year-old and I've been through some of those stages, I realize like, oh, they do get this. They do get over this. It's not going to be like this forever. And I feel like that really helps my perspective, because I'm like, oh, I see it with my 5-year-old now, or with my 8-year-old, where I'm seeing them go through the same stages. And I'm like, oh, I've seen this before. He got through it. They'll get through it. I feel like that really helps me keep my cool, is knowing like this isn't forever.
Yeah. Before I hit record, I was kind of talking with you about it. And you said that once they kind of get used to the flow of it, mm-hmm. it would get a little easier as well. Like, yeah, okay, this is definitely our new routine.
And the first year is the hardest.
Okay. And like, even if they were in a traditional school, I'm sure any teacher could tell you that too. The first mm-hmm. week or two are going to be really, really hard trying to get all of the kids into their new routine. So that does make sense. Yeah. And it's not like the things that I'm doing are any torture, you know? But I've battled back and forth with like, oh, should we just do the unschooling approach, or should I just wait to do until you're ready to learn to read? And I'm really more doing just phonics stuff. But I said to him, I use, because he's into like cars and mechanic stuff, I'm like, mm-hmm. listen, do you like doing oil changes on cars? Does anyone want to do that? And he's like, no. I mean, I don't know if he really knows what I'm talking. I think he's seen my husband change the oil on the 4-wheelers and the tractor mm-hmm. and that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, you don't like doing it, but it has to be done in order for the tractor to run. So therefore, we have to learn the fundamentals of reading before we can actually go ahead with the learning. So like, this is the tough part. Let's try this. So I feel like if I didn't do this stuff with him now, it might be harder to get him to learn to read when he is ready.
So there is, I've read in, because of being dyslexic, and my oldest has dyslexic tendencies, he's not diagnosed officially, but I'm pretty sure he is. I've looked into a lot on the science on reading, and what they see is if a kid is going to struggle to learn to read, that it's important that you teach them earlier rather than later. So
interesting.
The kids Why? That are with learning later, they're the ones that don't have problems learning to read.
Okay.
So like, in some countries, they don't start until 7, but most of the kids that don't struggle, they're not going to have a problem no matter when they learn.
And it's interesting because there's so many layers to learning to read. Like, it's not like mm-hmm. I'm sounding out words with him right now, but he's just turned 5. And it's like, okay, we need to be able to identify a letter and then get the sound that goes along with it. So we're not actually like reading right now, but it's, I want to go through the ABCs. I want to be able to point to a letter and you tell me what it is and what sound it makes. And even that is, I feel like we've been working on this for 2 years, but if he wasn't ready before, that's fine. And even if he's not ready now, it's fine. It's just like presenting it to him over and over and over so that when it does click, like swimming just clicked for him. I mean, I had him in swim lessons last year and again this spring and this past winter. And I was like, oh my God, he is not the swimmer in his little class of 5. I was like,
oh, but they get
he's
it.
He's sitting there just jumping on the platform. He's not paying attention to what the instructor's saying. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. But we have a pool, and once it got opened, it's like within a week, he's swimming, he's in the deep end, he's diving down to the bottom of the deep end to get the little fishies that you throw in. I'm like, where did this come from? So I'm hoping reading goes like that.
It might be similar. And each of my oldest, it felt like, you know, pushing a wheelbarrow, you know, to some extent with learning to read. And he's reading fine now. He still doesn't enjoy it. It's not like, he doesn't just like to read for fun. He likes to be read too. My next one down, it came so easy to her. It was just night and day. And she enjoys it. She was very like, oh, I can read a new word. And then she'd be practicing spelling words before we were even working on that. So some of that is the kid. So some kids, you know, you're going to feel like you're pushing them uphill, but they'll get it eventually. And then other kids, it's just going to be easy for them. He is much better at math, though. And I feel like that's a thing too.
Yeah, like it's either one or the other that they're strong in.
Yeah.
How do you incorporate your farm? Do you incorporate your farm into your homeschooling?
So that's more of a, like, it's more of just like a routine thing. Like, it's not like into the homeschool seat time, but it's more like, oh, we're going to go out and weed the garden. It's just part of our day. So like I have our book work time and then the rest is just life, but I'll include it if I'm doing like quarterly reports.
Yeah. I need to incorporate weeding into my day, apparently. It's bad. I just started a garden 3 years ago and it's just, it stinks, like, especially where we live. I don't, maybe it's like this everywhere because of the seasons, but you only get one shot and then whatever you mess up on, like, you can't try again really until next year. You have to write it down someplace and remember where you wrote it. Someone told me to put paper bags underneath, like, when, I don't know, in between so that biodegradable and they're supposed to keep the weeds away. Mine didn't. I don't know, whatever. I just put the dirt over it, but the dirt over it had weed seed in
it. Weed seeds. Or if they blow into it when the dandelions come.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. I spent all this time putting the paper down and
I do find it helpful with the weeds to plant things close together, as close as you're allowed to, because any bare patch of dirt, a weed's going to grow into anyway.
Especially with a baby. It's like she doesn't let you just set her down so you can go weed and you can't put her in there with you. She'll be pulling everything out. And then my son's in there with me, stepping on the actual plants. I'm like, this is a test year three.
Yes.
So what kind of curriculums are you working with and have you worked with and did like or didn't?
So when I was homeschooled, my mom mainly used Abeka. And at the time, it was kind of like Abeka or Bob Jones. There were a few other things, but that's really what was available at the time. They're not bad curriculums, but for myself, I use more eclectic approach to homeschooling, where I like to pick and choose different things, and I wanted things that were more tailored to the homeschool environment. So for math, I use Matthew C up until about third grade, and then I switch over to Saxon math, which my mom did use that one. And then for language arts, I use All About Spelling, All About Reading, and Essentials in Writing. I have also used Handwriting Without Tears, which now that my kids have done the first few workbooks, I feel like I can just give them something to copy down. I don't really need a workbook for them anymore. Once they know how to do their letters, you don't need to keep buying the workbooks. History, I've done Knotgrass history, and I really liked their history for elementary, but they only had 2 years of elementary. So this year we're using Beautiful Feet books for history, which I'm excited about because it's all literature based. And I do find the kids just remember things better when it's like in story form.
Yeah, than if you're just, adults
this
too.
Happened in this year. And science, we're using Apologia Science, which is it's a Christian based curriculum that uses kind of a Charlotte Mason-y approach. And I like it because I can combine all of my kids into one. As they get older, they'll have their individual grades, like once they get into high school. But for now, we just kind of read it aloud together and do this experiments together. So I only have one for all of the kids, which is nice.
Okay. I'll link everything in the show's description too. How, like, for right now, I'm just doing the phonics, which is a Hegarty, like it would be used in actual school type thing. Mm-hmm. And then the All About Reading and the Good and the Beautiful for math. So I'm just doing that. They all say they should take 10 minutes. With a 5-year-old, it takes at least an hour. Is there more that you did with your kindergartners or 5-year-olds or less? Like, we're not doing any science. I mean, other than just being like out in play and like, we'll talk about things, you know, as like the garden and the weeds and that sort of stuff. Yeah. I'm not even having them do handwriting.
I definitely did some handwriting, but it was more like I found papers and printed them out and had them just copy the letters. So, and I tried to have it correlate to what they were learning in phonics. I do find that, especially if a kid that's not excited about learning, they're telling you, oh, you know, stop at 10 minutes or stop at 15 minutes. But if they're kind of pushing back at you at doing anything, you know, 15 minutes could go by and you could have accomplished nothing. That definitely has happened. I feel like the more you get in the groove of it, the less that happens. But there's yeah. always going to be days where, you know, you went and saw family the day before and you stayed out late and they're grumpy the next day. Sometimes we would have a bad day and I would just be like, all right, we're done for the day. We're going to try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
That does happen sometimes. But I do find the more you get into a routine, the easier it does get. But specifically with reading with my oldest, it always took longer than the 15 minutes because I felt like we never accomplished anything of substance in that period of time. If that makes
sense.
That's so
funny because I've met your oldest and I feel like he regurgitates all this information. Like, you know, I would think he was a bookworm. I would think he's out there like looking up all this sort of stuff. And like he seems like a little encyclopedia.
He loves to learn things. He loves facts. He loves like animal documentaries, how things work. Or we have like there's something called engineering disasters. Like he loves that stuff. And he loves to be read to. So that is a huge part of our homeschooling is read alouds. So mm-hmm. That's a huge way that kids just absorb information if they're interested in a topic. And he just absorbs it.
Is the read aloud you reading to him or like a podcast reading to him? Or
me reading to him typically. Okay. So sometimes it's hard to find the time depending on the season, like whether you have a new baby or things are just crazy or a project. But I try really hard to make time for it because there's so many benefits to reading aloud to your kids. Not just like, you know, an audiobook, which those are great too. It's just that relationship piece of like mm-hmm. sitting down with them and reading to them. They end up associating reading with love. So mm-hmm. that if you have a kid that struggles to read, they end up liking books even if they don't really like to read. It's kind of a way to get them to read.
Where do you find the books that you get?
All over. So there's a website called Simply Charlotte Mason that has like book lists for like read alouds for different ages and grades. Sometimes I'll go on the Beautiful Feet Books website and look at their list and see what they have and pick those out. Sometimes even on like different homeschool website, they'll have lists. Some things are things that my mom read with us, and some things are books that come from different organizations like Answers in Genesis or Institute for Creation Research, things like that, just from all over, really. I don't actually go to the library a ton because I find my kids are rough on books. So if I find a book that I know that we like, I often will find it used somewhere because I know that they're going to want to look at it over and over and over and it's going to get beat up. And I don't want to worry about ruining a library book, if that makes sense.
Your picture's up on the street corner. She ruined all our books. Don't let her in. Yeah, that's been, I started using like the Read Aloud Revival book list, and a lot of them I've been super impressed with because just going to the library, you know, and having him pick books, he's just picking something for, it's the first thing he sees. Or something on the cover. But I'm like, okay, which is fine if it gets you excited about reading. But is this also like the best? I want to be the most efficient with our time too. I don't want to get something that is way over your head or way underneath.
Or just not like a very like, I feel like a lot of the books that they stick out on the shelf that like maybe are pretty and their pictures, some of them are painful to read as a parent. I want to be as interested as they are when I'm reading. Yeah. And I also feel like, unfortunately, even in our local libraries, there is definitely propaganda when they're curtailing whatever they decide to put out there. So that is definitely, like, I really don't go to story time or we don't go to those things because I feel like, I don't know, I don't want to be paranoid, but I do feel like there's definitely propaganda going on at the libraries when they put those things together.
Yeah, I agree with you. Even just from like the masking, it was mm-hmm. never even an option to come in if you didn't want to mask when it was during all of that. And I mean, I was vocal about it. I went in for something and they said, oh, you should bring your kids in. I said, yeah, well, when you stop masking, I will. And, you know, I think they looked at me like, what? I was like, well. But, you know, even from just having notes on the door when you go in now, it's we welcome everybody, and it's got to have like, you know, every single denomination of everything, including the rainbow. And it's like, why does it have to be brought up? Like, of course you welcome everybody.
Nobody it doesn't even be a question, right?
Yeah. Who's been turned out away from a library? Maybe a homeless person, but unless you got a needle hanging out of you, I'm pretty sure the library welcomes you. Why are we stating this? And little kids aren't going to like even understand that. So yeah, I agree with you on the propaganda stuff. It's like, we're out in the country too. What is going on?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's probably part of their funding thing. They probably have to put it out there for funding.
Yeah. Isn't that so sad? Which just goes to kind of show how like the school system would be. This is just a small branch of it. So how involved is your husband with the homeschooling of your kids? Does he do any hands-on stuff or more the decision-making in the beginning of the year or like not at all?
So I do, when it comes to curriculum, that's pretty much 100% me. The homeschool day is mostly me. He does a lot of music with the kids. He plays the guitar and he's teaching them, and he can play ukulele as well. So he's been teaching them those things. I know some piano theory. He can play piano by ear. So I've kind of taught them a little bit how to read music, and then he takes some of that as well. So I feel like he does the music stuff. He does a lot of hands-on, like building things, that kind of stuff, but not specific, like we're learning to read or sometimes this. So the only thing he would do with all about reading, and this was a tip I had, was sometimes I would do the phonics portion of all about reading and there might be a story later on that they're supposed to read and they were just exhausted just from like the activity in the lesson. So I'd break it up and be like, okay, you can read the story with daddy when he gets home from work. Yeah. So then it felt like exciting, like I'm showing him what I can do. So sometimes he would do that just because they were too exhausted to do it earlier.
I agree with you on that, because with the all about reading, when it says at the bottom, you know, now spend 20 minutes reading. You know, I'm like, that's going to be our nighttime putting you to bed reading, and then just try to get them to bed early enough where I'm not falling asleep reading it. And then you got the baby who's like crawling all over the bed. You can't concentrate on the book. And
the little ones are the harder part of homeschooling. Once you get the older one doing it, then you're like, all right, the little one's bored.
So how do you navigate that?
That is just by the season. Sometimes when they were little babies, I would take advantage of nap time to do the schoolwork so I could just have one-on-one focus. I do find the kids function best in the morning. So I would just kind of power through it, and it was almost like you had to teach the little child how to do school too, or tolerate it, I guess. So I'd usually have special toys that I only brought out during that time so that they'd be occupied for a little bit, or I'd print out activities and coloring pages. Sometimes you're like putting them in the high chair with a crayon and a bunch of paper and you keep handing them paper.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Play-Doh.
Yeah, right. My daughter is 11 months now, and she still is very much like doesn't really want to be put down. I feel like, I guess because I nursed her. I don't remember my son being like that, but he was bottle fed. So I don't know, but she, has her tantrums. Sometimes like a hit or miss day. So it could have to do with teething too, just wanting to be near you.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, I can't imagine four. Maybe they get used to it because it's just like, well, mom has to. I mean, mom has to do this other stuff. So I have to be okay with being put down, and they get used to that. That has been a struggle as well. But I'm hoping I'm getting out of the weeds on that one. But then I know I'll be sad when she doesn't want to always snuggle me. But
yes,
she is a little... she's a little stinker, doesn't let us get a lot done.
Sometimes I'd put them in the carrier and I would be standing while my one child was doing their schoolwork just to keep them happy.
What kind of carriers did you... because now that she's almost a year, like, is there a different carrier now? Like, did you always use the Mobi or did you upgrade as they got bigger?
I think it was called a Bjorn 360. So like... okay. I could put them on my back. I could put them on my front. They could face out. I had a bunch of options with it. A lot of times they wanted to be on my back, which was easier sometimes.
But, definitely. I don't
hit or miss.
Mine doesn't go on the back, and I'm thinking maybe I need something like that because now that she's a year almost, she's in the way in the front.
With my daughter, she actually learned how to write really early because I took like printed like number and letter sheets that you would trace and put them in a bunch of page protectors, put them in a folder and gave her dry erase markers. And she would go through the whole thing, initially just scribbling on it. But eventually, by the time she was like 2 and a half, she was tracing all the letters and writing her own. Because she liked to color while we were doing school.
That's awesome. Yeah, Treehouse Schoolhouse has a similar thing that you can like, you know, she recommends that, like the menu options. What do you use to wipe that stuff off with?
I try really hard at the end of the school day to take like a washcloth and not wet, just dry and wipe it off.
Okay.
If I forget, then I'd have to painfully go through with a wet one and clean each page up.
Yeah.
But sometimes like you're like, okay. Getting peace now to do school, and it's going to take me a little longer later, but it's worth it.
I just wanted to take a moment to thank you guys for checking out my podcast. It has been so cool to be able to interview these homeschooling families and learn myself and then extend it to you all. And hopefully you're learning right along with me. Thank you to all the people who have posted reviews. The reviews really help. It kind of boosts us when people go to search for things like homeschooling. I want to just give a couple of shout outs, if you don't mind. Chelsea Raybay, thank you so much. You wrote, favorite podcast. So far, this is my favorite homeschooling podcast. I've listened to a bunch. I'm a new homeschooler, and this is by far the most informative. Well, thank you, Chelsea. I love listening to the real world thoughts, opinions, and hearing answers to the questions I've been thinking myself, not just making me feel bad for not knowing all. Well, Chelsea, thank you so much. I started it for people because I was listening to podcasts and kind of getting down on myself. Like maybe I'm not equipped to do this because it does feel like everybody knows more than I do. Tanya BK, you wrote, this has been the most useful podcast. Questions you've asked are exactly what I had in my head. And the noise from other people around us who just don't get it, they don't bother me as much. Thank you so much for doing this. Well, Tanya, you are welcome. And lastly, MDCDD wrote, great podcast to learn about homeschooling. I was looking for podcasts about homeschooling to listen to as I will be starting to homeschool my kids, and I found this great podcast. Every episode has been a great listen and so informative on different perspectives of homeschooling. I look forward to listening to new podcasts. Keep up the great work, Cheryl. Thank you guys so much. If you want a chance to get your review read on the air, please hop over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I really appreciate the reviews, taking the time out from your day to let me know what you think, whether it's good or bad. All of it helps me. Oh, I almost forgot the review from RustyButt11224-3450. Thank you. Very informative, and the sound quality is great. Keep it up. Well, thank you, Rusty Butt. I'll do just that. Yeah, because one of the books like that that my son has that you rewrite in, it comes with like a, I don't know, it looks like a Windex type of thing. And I'm like, that can't be good for them. But I tried like just water and that didn't come off. I'm like, there's got to be something that the homeschool community uses.
I think people use vinegar or rubbing alcohol a lot of times.
Okay.
I find if you can get it like within a short period of time, like when you're done with school and you can just wipe it off, for the most part, it comes right off.
Do you guys have animals on your farm?
Just plants right now. Once we're actually moved over, because we live in our house and then our land is in a different town. Once we're moved over there, we've talked about getting like chickens or even like a couple grazing animals.
And if anyone were to follow you on Instagram, which I recommend that you do, your bouquets that you do are just gorgeous. And I also love the videos that you put on of kind of like the how to change the oil in a tractor. You know, these little how-to videos with the kids all helping. And I love that. I think that's why my son loves, I probably shouldn't even admit that I let him watch this on YouTube, but Hudson's Playground. Yeah. Well, and he loves seeing like this kid do stuff with his dad in the tractor. And, you know, your video kind of reminded me of that in the not so like flamboyant way that the dad's like, hi. I think he's trying to be like, I don't know, blippy or something. I think it's working for him though, because I did look up at one time what he makes and
they have a lot of subscribers on that channel. Like a lot.
Yeah, so I guess it is worth it to run on stage.
For them anyway. I don't know if I would want that kind of persona.
Yeah. That might I should ask him if he homeschools. Maybe he can come on, Hudson's dad.
There you go.
But I do like that, you know, your videos are these kind of like how-tos so the kids can learn that sort of stuff.
Because,
you know, that is so much better than some of the stuff that's out there. Do you do any sort of screen time with your kids? Do you allow it?
So we do, it depends on the day. If it's a really rainy, yucky day, I'll let them have more screen time. If it's a really nice day, my kids will always ask because, of course, they're going to ask. I try not to let them have screen time on nice days because I'm like, well, it's nice outside. It might be raining and thundering tomorrow. Let's not waste the day. If it's like a really yucky day or a super cold day, I'll let them watch stuff. But usually I have DVDs and I have a few, couple of YouTube channels that I'll let them watch. But I try really hard to limit it to ones where I feel like the language is pretty clean, the behavior is really good, because I've noticed my kids will pick that up. Like, even like sometimes people are rude to each other and it's in a joking way that's supposed to make like maybe an adult laugh, but kids pick it up and then they copy it. Yeah. It's little things you don't think of until you have kids and you're like, oh, now my kids are saying things that are not kind to each other.
Yeah, definitely. I know it is hard. I notice my son asking for it more and more. And I'm like, Colin, where did this come from? I mean,
it's a boy thing. I'm convinced of it.
Really? Okay. Because it's just an addiction. And how can you fault them when they see adults on their phones? They probably associate it as the same thing. And, the little things. I don't know, but I do try to, okay, let's be conscious of what we can monitor. Do you do any sort of video games? Because I haven't found any that I really like that is willing to do.
The only time that my kids do any video games is at my parents' house, because my parents have, I don't know what system they have, but they have like Mario Kart at their house.
Oh, so it's
like
nice.
At
old my school.
But at our house, we don't have any video games. For a short period of time, I tried Khan Academy Kids, which is like supposed to be educational, but I always tried to make sure I was watching it with them. But there is also some sneaky propaganda stuff in there because it's like a free application. So I was like, no thanks. Let's not do this anymore. So I'm a little bit hesitant about those free programs, because I'm like, oh, what's the motive here?
Right. And I know somebody had told me like, oh yes, if you follow it back, you know, Bill Gates's company is funding that.
Of course.
I don't know. You don't know what to believe anymore or not. You know, right. I don't know how you confirm that. But
that wouldn't surprise me.
True. Very true. So now growing up, did you have screen time growing up?
So my parents did not, my parents were like, so homeschooling and homeschoolers in general tend to be pretty religious. But at the time I would say it was even more so. And there was a lot of very, very conservative homeschoolers. My parents, with a Christian home that we grew up in, but we were not like the ultra conservative Baptist type homeschoolers. So we did a lot of the things that the other kids didn't. We had a lot more screen time. We didn't always wear dresses everywhere, things like that. And we did have video games, but I didn't really enjoy screen time as a kid. I mean, there were a few things I liked to watch, but it was never an addiction for me. Whereas like my sister, if she could have watched it 24/7, she would have. Like, it's just different personalities. I preferred to be outside, and if she was allowed to, she would be in front of a screen and it didn't matter what it was.
That's interesting. And I grew up where I could watch TV all the time if I wanted to. And I mean, like you, I had a couple of shows that I really liked, like Full House and Saved by the Bell. Or like Nickelodeon would have, you know, Nick at Night. And I remember watching I Love Lucy. They would have like Lucy Tuesdays and Bewitched Be Wednesdays. And I mean, I watched TV after school. I watched it before bed. It was like, I didn't really know that there was, I mean, I grew up in the city though. So I don't know if that makes a difference. It's not
you have less options for entertainment, like outside of the home.
Yeah, there weren't kids. There weren't like kids all around the neighborhood to play with or anything like that. I was enrolled in like dance classes, but if I wasn't at dance or, I was watching TV and Mm-hmm. No wonder I had a weight problem back then. I was drinking soda, eating chips, and watching TV. So I'm definitely trying to change it for my kids. Mm-hmm. But it is funny because I think like, oh, okay, well, I still didn't turn out that bad. I mean, I made a life for myself. But I guess like, what is the goal when we try to say like, we don't want to give our child screen time? And I think about that a lot. Like, you know, okay, it could be by chance that I turned out okay. It could be other factors. It could be, you know, friends that I had and whatnot. But also there was, I feel like more of an innocence to what was on TV back then. Maybe if I go back and watch it, I would feel different. But now knowing what I know now and stuff I see on the kids, things that are supposed to be towards kids, it seems way more malicious than...
I think it is. There is definitely, I have different eyes looking at some old school stuff. Even like the Peanuts, you think it's like totally innocent.
Yeah.
I had gotten, I don't know if it was Charlie Brown Christmas or Thanksgiving, like all excited. I was going to show it to the kids. And then I'm like realizing Lucy's calling them blockhead and things. And then my kid repeats it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know that I like that.
Yes, we did that last Thanksgiving. And I was like, what? Where's the innocence?
So I think it just went over my head as a kid. I don't know. But as an adult, I see this stuff and I'm like, oh, I don't know what I think of this.
Yeah. But and isn't that part of the push-pull too? Like, how much do you not expose them to? Because one day they're going to go out into the world and it's like, well, I don't want you to have lived under a rock. I want you to know, like, what, I don't know. That this exists. It's really hard parenting. And that's whether you homeschool or not. I mean, I think every parent has that.
I think it's harder in a public school or any school situation where they're specifically public school, because I feel like the kids are exposed to more and there's more of that like, oh, what do you mean you're not watching this? It's not as acceptable to be different in a public school setting, I think.
That's very true. And especially now that there's social media, which there wasn't when we were growing up. With like TikTok and whatnot. Oh, you don't have a TikTok account. What are
there's
they exposed
definitely,
to?
I think, more peer pressure in that setting. With as far as like, so we don't do the majority of Disney movies. We don't do a lot of different popular movies. My husband grew up in a family that pretty much thought that those things were evil. He's not at that point anymore, but he still doesn't really care for a lot of it. Yeah. So we've decided like if our kids really wanted to watch something, we would just look at it case by case and see like, all right, we'll watch it together, but we're not going to necessarily just be like, all right, we're not going to introduce it. Mm-hmm. But we figure there'll be some things that come up. I do try to read if there's like a classical literature that the movie's based on, then I'm like, oh, there is a book about Bambi and there is a book about Robin Hood. We'll read that instead. So they kind of know what it is, I guess.
Okay. But well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm kind of thankful now that, because that was a big deal for my husband. He's like, I don't want our kids watching Disney. At the time, I'm like, what? What do you mean? But now, in hindsight, I'm kind of glad that he put his foot down because of everything that goes on with Disney now. I'm like, I guess that's a good idea.
I don't even know what's mainstream information and what's still considered conspiracy theories, like, around it. You know, it's like, but there's just definitely, not good stuff going on with Disney.
they don't even try to hide it anymore, really.
Yeah. That could be a whole... You could have probably a whole podcast. They probably do have that where people just go on and analyze all the old movies and the Disney movies to find,
There were some videos that go over things that my husband had showed me. And there are, like, they would draw in, like, really inappropriate things, but it'd be like a split second. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if it actually did anything to the kids' brains because they wouldn't have really seen it, but it was there, like, inappropriate. And, like, I think there's, like, a nude scene in The Rescuers Down Under that, like, is so fast you can't see it. So it was there, but it was more subtle back then. I think now it's just, like, out in the open and right there.
And like you kind of said before, sometimes it's, oh, this is to make the parents laugh. But there's probably still a nefarious reason behind it. Like, you know, I get that a lot of like Pixar is to make the parents laugh, but I don't know. It's almost like, the, I don't know, there just isn't evil intent behind it when you really start thinking about it. Like, it's not as innocent as they're intending. So, I mean, we do have to protect our kids from a lot of that, because you just don't even want to give money to people that...
Oh, yeah, because you're voting with your dollars.
Yeah, that's never been more true, definitely. Okay, so I'm trying to think of all the things that I wanted to ask you, because I love your situation, because you and your husband were both homeschooled too and decided to do it with your kids. That's so neat. Now, did you guys... You did go to a college or a university, right?
So I went to college for nursing. I had a 2-year nursing degree, and then I got my 4-year out after I got my 2 years. So I did that. And then my husband went to trade school to be a union electrician. And then he also did a few online classes that made it so his apprenticeship counted as a 2-year degree. So his was a little bit less traditional. But neither of us really struggled when it came to school.
That's what I was going to ask you. How was your transition into going into college?
So my last year of high school, my mom had me take college classes online. And I remember being so nervous. It was just like freshman comp was like the first class I took. And I went in there and I'm like, I'm so nervous because I'd never had a teacher other than my mom. So then you're wondering like, all right, do I measure up? Like, or is my mom, you know, making me out to be smarter than I am? So I went way overboard on all of the assignments. And then when I did really well, I was like, wait a minute.
Like oh, this is this how little they want from me? Oh.
Yes. And the biggest shock I had was how not serious the other students were taking things. People would not show up, not turn in paperwork, like, or there was even one time where the professor was like, he would give you full credit back if you corrected your mistakes. And people just wouldn't do it. That just shocked me. Like, why wouldn't you?
Right.
And then
I was probably one of those people. No, I would do that. If it were that simple, come on.
There was one kid. I just remember this shocking me. I was 17 at the time. And I'm sitting next to him in class, and he asked me, oh, how was your weekend? And I had gone paintballing for like a fundraiser with a church, a local church. And I actually didn't really enjoy it that much, but I had some fun. And he was like, oh, I think I had fun, but I don't really remember it. And I remember just being like, why would you want to do anything that you didn't remember when you were done? It was a lot of that stuff where I was just like, what?
The kind of the culture shock of all that. Yeah. So like the academics, that was a breeze for you. You're like, no, I have surpassed this. Even with the dyslexia and all that, like the regular work came easy.
It was just they told you what they expected of you. And as long as you did it, you pretty much got a good grade.
Yeah.
Nursing was harder because that was like drinking from a fire hydrant and everybody struggled with that. But the regular run-of-the-mill classes were not an issue.
So then, okay, I'm getting to the end of my questions here. But I'm glad this went full circle to kind of go through. You know that I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, okay, I have the career. And if I want to give, I believe, you know, for me, it would be more mentally stable for me and my children to leave the career to homeschool. It was always probably an idea in your mind that that was going to be what you did too. How hard was it to leave your career to homeschool? And do you have plans of going back once the kids are older?
I think when I initially was like, oh, I'm going to leave, there was that thought in the back of my mind, like, oh, it's always going to be there. You're always going to be able to get a nursing job. There was definitely a small piece that was like, you're giving up this. Because even in the homeschool world, I feel like there's so much emphasis on academics and you almost are your career that I think that's difficult, where it's like, even if you're a breadwinner, you're not your career. You're a human being outside of that. That's just what you do to survive. Now that I am homeschooling, like if I don't have to go back to work at some point, which, you know, the way we have things planned, I shouldn't. I don't think I would. I think when the kids grow up, I'll just be home and work on my garden and I guess that kind of stuff.
Take care of their kids.
See the grandkids and just be like an old fashioned grandma, I guess.
Yeah. Did your mother have to leave her career to homeschool you guys?
So my mom, and I think this is another reason my mom went like 110% into trying to make sure, she was trying to prove herself. She was technically a high school dropout to some extent. She had my sister at 16. My dad was 17. They got married very young. There was a lot of like, you guys are never going to make it. And they're very stubborn people are like, we're going to show you. But I think there were a lot of naysayers when they said they were going to homeschool. And they're like, well, you can't do this. You just have a GED. There was definitely that. And I feel like she felt like she needed to prove something. And she's an extremely smart woman. She's actually one of the smartest women I know, even though she doesn't have a college degree.
Maybe she doesn't have a college degree.
Maybe. She definitely struggled with people like, well, you know, when are you going to do something with your life? Or people would say when my youngest brother graduated, so what are you going to do now? And she does the bills for my dad's business, but she's like, you know, I've been raising kids for this long. Maybe I'm just going to be a housewife and have that be good. She's like, who says when you're in your 50s, you have to go get a career?
Yeah, it's, and like, I get why people say that. I used to be one of those people that said that too. And it's hard for me to pull out of kind of like the matrix of like, yeah. Well, why? Like everyone is like, you can't give up a pension. And like,
yeah.
You know, like I'm moving to Antarctica or something. But I really think society grooms us to think mm-hmm. that way. And like in such a short time, because the women's movement was just in the 60s. Before that, they were mostly all home. If they could be home, mm-hmm. they were home with their kids. And the kids did go off to school in the 50s and, you know, 40s. So
and like people that could afford it.
Thing. And yes, that's very true. That it's like, just how did in a couple decades it go from like your identity is now your job and like that just totally defines you, and then your kids are just something you have in the background, and you know, like feeding them nutritious foods and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's so crazy to me when you think of like a timeline, and I think that's lost on us, like the actual timeline of events and like when man, you know, came to be, to like just how much has gone on and how I can't say how far we've come, but how maybe far the trajectory went out just in the last couple of decades, you know.
It's amazing, really.
Yeah, it's sad because there's more to life than that paycheck. And when you have a bigger paycheck,
more than life.
Yeah, when you have a bigger paycheck, you just learn to spend it in more frivolous mm-hmm. ways. And I really think that, you know, you downgrade what you have to with, for a simpler lifestyle when you have like one income or whatnot, or it's, you know, it can. It's just so funny to think like, yeah, people think I'm like,
they think you're crazy. No. Yeah. But maybe, you know, this is what should be, you know, healthy or what should be normal. And it's really all of the other stuff. When you really think about it, like, should that be normal? My mom's, you know, if you want to get into conspiracy theory, I'm not sure that this even is a conspiracy theory, that getting women into the workforce was actually trying to get cheaper labor. Because if you saturate the workforce, you don't have to pay people as much. And then in the end, you have, you know, families are forced to have two income households. You know, and even like single people, they often struggle to pay for apartments and utilities and stuff on a lot of, you know, these jobs. Not all of them, but it's definitely, you can see it where, you know, you can have cheaper labor by telling women that it's liberating.
Yes. Well, 100%. I hadn't heard of it from that turn, though, to have cheaper labor, because now that the workforce is saturated, you don't have to pay people as much. That's interesting. But what I have heard, is that the government was behind the women's movement to get a bigger tax base. Because now you're not collecting taxes. Yeah, you're not only collecting taxes from, you know, say 40% of the population, but 80% of the population and,
yeah.
or, you know, 75. And to get control of our children earlier on, because if mom is going to work, we have to enroll the kids in school and daycare. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now we have government run daycares and they've got a hold of your kids earlier on. I mean, it's threefold.
I believe it was like the Carnegies and the Rockefellers that were kind of part of pushing to get that the women into the workforce because they wanted cheaper labor because they were more the whatever you call that. They were more the business side of things.
Well,
the government
for the and Rockefeller has said he's been quoted as saying, "I want control of the children because I want to bring them up." Just smart enough so that they'll take direction and be good workers, but not smart enough to outsmart their bosses.
Yeah.
And then Rockefeller is on all the textbooks.
Or Rockefeller that donated to like the library system. Like they really donated a lot to the education system. Yes. Not saying it was all like for a bad reason. Maybe there was some charity there, but there's definitely some not so great dealings as well.
Oh yeah. Because Nelson Rockefeller, he would give money to schools and universities and then in exchange for that, say, can you put some of our members on the board so that we can see what you're doing with our money? And then it just got more and more of his members on the board. And then Rockefeller was on every textbook after a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. So there's my conspiracy theory.
Is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we touched upon while we have you here and you have all this knowledge and information?
We covered quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that I had written down, I think we had talked about it at one point, was how neat it was at the time. I didn't really realize it, but when we first started homeschooling, there were people who were the leaders who were really very much part of homeschooling becoming legal in New York State. And they, you know, it was only made legal officially in 1988. And prior to that, you had to have an exemption. And that meant like submitting a plan, you know, basically you had to tell the school why you couldn't send your kids to school. They had to approve it. They might go into your home. So homeschooling prior to that point was very difficult. And a lot of times they would deny exemptions. Parents ended up in jail because they decided to homeschool anyway, even though it was denied. Wow. And then Homeschool Legal Defense got involved. It ended up being in the news, and they kind of quickly drafted the legislation they have now to make it legal and keep people out of jail. And I found, in hindsight, because I didn't realize this obviously as a little kid, it was kind of cool knowing the people that really were very much willing to put it all on the line to make homeschooling legal in our state. And I wonder, I'm like, would people do that today? Like, that was pretty brave when you think about it.
That was really brave. I mean, I guess the closest we've seen is like during COVID, you know, a lot of parents were against their kids getting masked and, you know, but I didn't see like the uprising that I thought I would have.
They put it on the line, and it was nice knowing those people at the time, like they were very staunch, like for homeschooling and supportive people.
And isn't it weird too, because you know, 100 years ago, in the early 1900s, like school wasn't even a thing. Like you didn't generally send your kids to an institution to learn. So in 100, well, that was in the 80s. In 80 years, we went from it's now illegal not to, you know, to like we kind of went back to the middle part of the pendulum. But how crazy that it went from nothing to 100%. And now, you know, hopefully we keep our liberties. I just see homeschooling getting bigger and bigger. So it'll be interesting to see
where
this
goes. Try, because I do know that public schools locally are getting less funding because they've lost enrollment to homeschooling and to private schools. So I do wonder, like, are they going to try to put something down the pike because they're not happy about this? I don't know how that'll go. But
I'll tell you what, I did call our local school because I thought my son, or think my son, could have some issues with speech. And a woman I know said, well, you get the services for free, you know, because you pay the taxes in the district, call them and have your son evaluated. And I called and spoke with them, and they said to me, well, can other people understand him? And I said, well, I mean, yeah, like if he's excited and talking fast, no, they might need him to repeat himself. They go, oh, well, he's probably fine then. And they didn't have me come in for the evaluation. And I am most likely sure it's because I told them I'm homeschooling. So
Yeah. Well, and I've heard, not to bash public schools, but like I've heard from different people that the public school speech therapy isn't really that great anyway. that might depend on the district, but
yeah,
my youngest brother had speech therapy and it was private because my mom was always big on like not taking anything from the public school because she didn't want to owe them anything. But
just
yeah.
Just your soul, mom.
Yeah, right? and that was a good speech therapist. And I think our insurance did cover the private therapy because he had a documented speech issue. There was I think he got a visit a week for a certain number of weeks and it did help him. But
all right. Well, that's something I didn't really think about looking into as well, seeing if I could get a private one through the insurance. That's a good point. See, these things that like we don't think of. This is why we need a podcast to get these little bits of information. That's awesome. Well, Anne, I kept you for over an hour. I'm sure your husband is ready to have you back to help with the four kids. But thank you so much for being here today. I love this conversation and your point of view on and your experience with everything. I think this will be an episode people really enjoy. So thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And enjoy your evening.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.